Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Welcome, my wonderful, wonderful audience. You get more wonderful all the time. We are so glad to have you here and to be talking to you every week. And you are looking at an amazing man. You may have seen him before on our show, Rainer Fulmich, interviewing us, if not us interviewing him. He's an international trial lawyer. He really feels that what's going on in the world today is just a total offense against the Nuremberg Code, against freedom, against constitutionality. And he is a powerhouse attorney in Germany, and they are searching the world where to bring cases, how to approach challenging in the courts, a very tedious, difficult, onerous task. These lockdowns and all the fake science and all that other stuff that's going on. In the meanwhile, just for a quick catch up, our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, has been done so well that we on our website have not been able to catch up. We have used up our first 20,000 printing. We're well into the second 20,000 printing, which is only just beginning in the next weeks. So we're not taking new orders. We are going to do everything in our power to fulfill the orders as fast as possible that we've gotten. But the book is also selling all around the world on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. It's been called a bestseller. So we're out there. The world is hungry for this information. And a key person in this whole story is Rainer Fulmich, and he's from Germany. I don't know if I said that. Welcome. It's really good to see you again.
It's always fun, and it's an honor to talk to you.
Oh, it's really great. And I hope I can get involved in one of these trials with you. I'm pretty good on a witness stand. I mean, the drug companies once complained to some of the attorneys that were hired me that I control the courtroom. Well, I don't really do that, but I do have some experience with over 100 trials against drug companies and criminal trials and malpractice and so on and so forth. So it's a pleasure to be working with you and catch us up. And this is your hour now, and tell us what you're doing, who you're working with, what's happening, how you're reading the landscape. You have an international viewpoint.
Well, yes, we are, and by we, I mean my law firm on the one hand and my friend and co-founder of the Corona Committee on the other hand, we're working on two levels. We're trying to get as much information as possible about this, I will now call it a plandemic, and bring it out into the open so that many people will begin to ask questions and look at the information and then make up their own minds instead of being fed other people's ideas. And on the other hand, both of us are lawyers, and we are in close cooperation with a whole group of international lawyers. We believe that both of these efforts are really important. I don't think that here in Germany, the judiciary is in any way effective at all with respect to these corona cases. However, I have known that our judiciary is ineffective whenever it comes to large global corporations for a long time. It's just that I had no idea how pervasive this kind of corruption is. I'm not saying that all of these judges get paid to decide cases in favor of these large corporations like Deutsche Bank or VW or others. But of course, if you are in a state like this is the state of Lower Saxony, which owns 20% of the shares in VW, which is also the employer of these judges, of course, you're not going to decide against VW because you're going to have to decide against your own employer. They don't say, they don't tell them, if you do that, that's the end of your career. But through the presidents of the courts, who are half judges and half of them are politicians, through the presidents of the court, there is a certain control and there are ways to manipulate the judges. Because once a year, these presidents of the courts write personal assessments for each and every one of the judges who work. I'm not going to say under them or for them, because officially, of course, they're independent. But it does make a difference if this assessment states that you didn't really worry enough about employment in the state of Lower Saxony, for example, because VW is one of the largest employers here. So that is, it's not a surprise to me to see now how in this corona context, they are a complete failure. That's why right from the start, I realized the only way to get this thing to get this thing done is to cooperate with international colleagues, in particular with those from the Anglo-American legal system, because you have three advantages in the United States or Canada or Great Britain, for that matter. Three major advantages over our legal system. You have an effective law of evidence, including pretrial discovery. You have a powerful tool to help even a lone consumer against large corporations, and that is class actions. We don't have that here. The lobbyists for the global corporations have been all too powerful. And the third effective tool is punitive damages. If you can prove that somebody committed an illegal or acted in an illegal manner and caused damage and did it on purpose, there is the possibility of having a court decide on punitive damages. So that is one side of the picture, the legal efforts. But the most important, I don't think that the courts of law will turn the tide with corona, with respect to corona, but they will have to do the cleanup work. And if it's not them, because the people, at least here in Germany, we think that most of the judges are incapable of doing the right thing. There's a few. Out of, I think, 65,000 judges, we have maybe 60 or 70 who understand that it is the rule of law that they have to uphold, and not the rule of Merkel and all of the others who are merely puppets now. But through this cooperation with our international colleagues, we believe there's going to be enough pressure building up, for example, in South Africa or in India, two countries that they didn't really have on their radar, two judicial systems that to a degree are still functioning, in particular in India. Through the pressure that is going to build up there, and through the evidence that is going to come out with the help of these cases that our colleagues are filing there, we believe even the German judges will ultimately not be able to ignore this evidence.
Wow. And what about, by the way, I'm familiar with all of that. I've testified as to punitive damages successfully in court. And I didn't know that you don't have those things in Europe. I don't know that they have them in Great Britain even, do they?
They don't have, I think that's where they invented class actions some 400 years ago, I believe, but I don't think they have them anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I've not been aware of effective abilities to do that. And I've testified in Canada, their system is somewhat similar, but since the healthcare system is owned and run by the government, you're effectively suing the government if you're a citizen, and that increases the burden and the unlikelihood. But I've been involved in winning suits in Canada. Actually, the first winning suit on tardive dyskinesia, which is a very severe disorder caused by antipsychotic drugs. So I've got a feather in my cap that way in Canada. What is your take on the whole world. You have, I think, a better perspective of, I know you do, a larger perspective than I do. Australia seems like it's being taken over. Before your interview is played, I've done an interview with Augusto Zimmerman from Australia, and I mean, he sees it the way I do from a distance, which is the Chinese communists are quite literally taking over the politicians, taking over Western Australia, and they're really on the way to communism as he sees it there. And I think you and I were agreeing that this is really a bad case of what's going on in Australia. Is it as bad in Germany? Is it as bad in some other places as Australia and increasingly Canada?
I think it's really bad in Australia and also in Canada. I have a friend, a former student of mine, who has been has a PhD in history. After she studied law at law school, she went into history. And she spent the last, I think, 25 years in Canada. Now she's leaving because she says, this is turning into a prison. We cannot even travel from province to province anymore unless we get vaccinated, get the jabs. So she's coming back to Germany now, this coming Friday. And just last night, we had an international Zoom conference with our friends from all over the world, including Canada, including Australia, including the United States, Italy, France, et cetera, et cetera. And it appears that there are places on this earth that are not as badly affected. The other side, of course, is trying to give us the impression that they have everything under control, but they don't. There are places on this earth where they have these rules and regulations, but nobody cares. Look at Belarus, for example, or some Asian countries, or some places in Latin America, even though the last time I spoke with our Chilean colleagues, the situation there is pretty bad as well. They're trying to exert extra special pressure on us here in Europe, and maybe on Germany in particular, because this used to be the economic powerhouse. And pretty soon that's going to be something from the past, because as you're saying there, I don't know what role the Chinese are playing here, not precisely, but it turns out that they are part of the group of people in countries who are trying to divide the spoils amongst them. And it does look, this is information we're getting from whistleblowers, as though they're taking over our automotive industry, which is our most important industry. That's what it looks like right now.
Wow.
Other parts of our economy are being taken over by American platforms. Amazon, for example, is taking over much of the retail business. Then there's Uber. They're trying to take over the cab industry. We haven't quite figured out how precisely they interact with each other. But it does seem as though we're not facing a kind of a monolithic block, but we're dealing with people who have competing and psychopaths who have competing interests, who are not always going in the same direction. That's an advantage for us, but it also is an advantage for us that they seem to have been forced into an early start, because what they have been doing over the last decades, 30, 40, maybe 50 years, is looting and plundering the taxpayers' assets. And this has been going on all over the world. And it was last year towards the end of 2019, there's lots of concrete evidence that there would have been a second economic or financial meltdown, similar or worse, much far worse to what happened in 2009. But I think that's what forced them into this early start. I think they would have tried to roll this whole thing out, this whole Corona agenda, anyhow, but maybe 5 or 10 years later. Because of this early start, they're making all these mistakes, and those mistakes that are really helpful for us, even though it's tragic, include these very serious side effects from these so-called vaccinations, because there's so many people who are dying after vaccination, and so many people who suffer myocarditis, people who have no prior conditions, young men in particular, suffer from myocarditis after getting the jabs. So this is helping us, even though this is really tragic, but that's the way it is. And we're trying to not be judgmental, of course. And then there's the German expression of Schadenfreude, which is now an international word. You can't have that, because it is our friends and relatives who also are dying after vaccination. But we do have to take a close look at what's going on, take that into account, and try and make people understand that this has nothing to do with COVID, but rather this is all caused by the so-called vaccinations.
Yeah. It's very similar here in the US. We're up to over 17,000 reported deaths now to the CDC in a little over a year. No, it's not even over a year. It's December, from December 2020 to October 2021. In the past, the average total of all reported deaths would vary between 50 to 120 for all vaccines. The 17,000 exceeds all reported deaths from all vaccines since the 1990s. And in the past, 50 deaths has caused the removal of vaccines from the marketplace. And instead of 50, we have 17,000. And the reports are but a fraction of the actual ongoing events. And studies show that between 1/10 and 1/100 or less are reported. So if we go very conservative and say, okay, 1 out of 10 deaths are getting reported, which is really giving a lot of more credit to the system than it deserves, then we're at 170,000 deaths in the U.S. And physicians in the U.S. that I work with, like Peter McCullough, who maybe the most outstanding physician in the world on these issues, and wrote an introduction to our book, he thinks that vaccines are going to kill far more people than the disease itself. And one of the reasons the disease is killing people is simply that they won't allow anywhere in the Western world easy access to treatments that work wonderfully, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and other things. Since I've seen you, I think I have a whole new huge discovery that ties together a lot of things. When we talked last, I think the deepest I had in terms of the planning for all of this, getting everybody together to plan for this, I think was a 2017 report from Bill Gates's organization called CEPI, which he had created in 2016, to the World Health Organization, in effect dividing up the world for the coming pandemic, saying that Gates and his CEPI group and his industries would take care of all the production and fulfillment of the vaccines, and the World Health Organization in turn would take care of monitoring science and keeping medicine and science under control. And even that they had a memorandum of agreement. And we found confirmation from WHO, we haven't found the agreement, that indeed there was a memorandum of agreement to all of this. But since then, we have found the preliminary business plan for CEPI. And it's up on our website, Bregan.com, under our book resources. And the preliminary business plan for CEPI was developed starting in January 2016. And it includes bringing together Fauci and BARDA, which is the organization in our government that is funding all the drug companies under the plans that were set up to rush through the vaccines and to pay the drug companies off completely. And it fits with the plans that Gates and all announced in 2016 in the preliminary plan, which would be no cost to the drug companies. They could complete direct and indirect costs taken care of. It turns up, of course, by the government is what they were saying is going to take care of it. And then we went further back since the book, although this a lot of this is in the chronology of the book. And we found that when Bill Gates announced the vaccine decade in 2012, that at that moment, 2010, which came through in 2020, decade fulfilled, that he was already working closely with Anthony Fauci. And the press, the media has completely denied any close relationship. He was one of five people announced that day on their council, which is essentially the vaccine committee. And they had the two World Health Organization members on this small committee, very progressive. The UN was involved in this small committee. And they were already beginning to say, we've got to get together with the pharmaceutical industry and get the world to agree that there'll be a no-cost, rapid platform. Everything we think was developed in 2020 is already being developed in 2012. And then I finally tracked down a 2012 UN resolution saying we support the Bill Gates and what he's doing and this massive organization he's creating. And the Chinese communists are in there from beginning. There's a representative of them involved. Usually their head of CDC is involved or someone else that's closely related to the Chinese. At that time, back in 2010-12, the head of WHO was a Chinese Canadian with close ties to the Communist Party. So we have tied it together now, and the links to the Chinese Party are in there. Chinese Communist Party are in there from the very, very early on. And the UN is where they're beginning to do all their manipulation. But they're not giving UN some ultimate power. They're keeping the ultimate power really organized under CEPI with the preliminary business plan of Bill Gates and Fauci. And also in on it from the very, very start is a Klaus Schwab with his Great Reset, which he announces in 2020. And then just one last thought. I didn't know about the what you just described, that the fear of the coming financial crisis in 2020. Maybe it's a joint contributor or an equal contributor to what I'm pretty sure caused them to act precipitously, which is what I agree with you. And that is the unexpected election and the of Donald Trump and his actual attempts to fulfill his anti-globalist agenda. And very early on, people don't realize this around the world, Trump announced that he was taking on globalism, used the word, and he particularly took it on in terms of one of the big Republican contributors, the Koch family, who was supposedly libertarians who love freedom, but who really loved to work with the Chinese communists who were slavers. I mean, it's quite libertarian. And they want open borders because that's freedom, but libertarianism actually says you can defend yourself. So the principles of libertarianism apply to defending, nation defending its own borders. Libertarians believe in a military. So it's all twisted, whether you're a libertarian, which is the extreme freedom philosophy, which I used to actually be very active in, or whether you're a progressive, doesn't matter where you are, you all come out to be a global predator. And we think we've really begun to track them much more deeply than in the beginning to all their original plans. And I was surprised to see how much the Chinese were involved in early, but how much the UN was involved in early. And actually by 2015-16, Bill Gates is saying that his companies are Pfizer and the other one whose name I always forget, and I keep a little Moderna, thank you. Pfizer and Moderna, and they're number one and two in their approval by the U.S. government through the emergency edict. So the emergency legislation. So we're getting a very full picture now that I haven't had a chance to talk about to Europe. I've been talking about a lot in the U.S. and a lot of it is covered in the book. So be interesting to share more of that with you. And
well, we will definitely when we are not right now. We're planning with this international group of lawyers to have an international mock trial or show trial, and we're gonna need expert witnesses, and the most important experts who we can speak with is people like you, psychologists, psychiatrists, because much of what we see now is psychological terrorism.
That is for sure, and that was what I thought was going to be one of my original functions. But there's a lot of folks talking about the terrorism. There's a lot of great experts on the terrorism issues. What's missing is the deep dive we're doing into how this thing was planned. Yeah. I don't know, other than God's hand, how I managed to just doing what everybody else does, which is sit up all night Googling and working through other sources and coming up with these documents, because these documents have never appeared before to the public view, the preliminary business plan, this incredible PowerPoint from CEPI to WHO, and the declarations that they had these nearly legal agreements, these memorandums of understanding and so on. So I'm happy to talk about those other issues, but there's a lot of folks can talk about the threats and the way it's being organized, and I'd love to do it. But I think what we're doing that's unique in our book, and our book covers everything, has a chapter on fear, but it's this depth organization. It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around, but it is real. It's documented. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. None of this was happenstance. Oh, but the reason I think they went precipitously in 2020 is because Trump took on China and the globalists. And all the globalists we have found, every one of them, has more allegiance in their heart to China and huge economic, if they're economic, financial people, investments in China. So once Trump started to stomp on the Chinese dragon, China was really suffering. He was really holding them accountable. He blew completely the whole thing about the vaccines and all. He got completely taken in or corrupted. I don't know which. I hope he was just taken in. But he was the cause of their acting early, because they had to stop Trump. And they acted just in time to prevent him from getting reelected. And that was, I think, their major goal, to stop the American revival. It's fundamentally a Judeo-Christian revival. I'm Jewish, as you probably know by now, but almost all the people we're working with in the U.S. and some in Australia are Christians. And there's been a Christian revival of freedom and defense of Jews and defense of Israel. That goes back to the founding principles of the country. That's what's going on now. So almost all the hundreds of people I'm working with and the millions I'm communicating most avidly with in the country represent the group that Trump represented. But many of them now are very, very disappointed with him and know that it's got to be a people's uprising, because he went for the business connections. Maybe as a builder, he had no idea what the corruption was like when you got to the pharmaceutical industry and the banks. I don't know.
It is going to have to be a people's uprising, yes. Because as I said, the courts of law, they can clean up afterwards. Maybe we're going to have to set the whole system, the whole judicial system up from scratch. But it'll not be the courts of law. There will be good decisions coming our way. There have been a couple of decisions already. And we're hoping for a win in South Africa with their constitutional court. There's going to be a case, a PCR test case, that's going to be filed very, very soon.
It oh, good, good.
2 months ago. And then there's things going on in India. What this boils down to is that we're not dealing with a corona crisis, but rather we're dealing with the PCR test crisis, because that's how they created the cases. They didn't have any cases when this whole thing started, because whatever happened in China, we don't quite see through this yet, but there may have been a lab leak, there may have been an accident, it may have been staged, we don't know. We do know that both Fauci and his German equivalent here, Drosten, who is a complete fake in our view, that both of them worked on gain-of-function experiments. But we also know that whatever happened in China had died down by March of 2020. So they didn't have any cases, but they did want to roll this whole agenda out, which we think they've been making concrete plans for at least 10 years.
Yes,
so that coincides with what you're seeing. Yeah,
that's good.
And the final, their final dress rehearsal was, of course, event 201 in, I think it was October or September of 2019. But they didn't have any cases. So when they decided that they were going to go forward with their plans, they needed cases in order to have the WHO declare a public health emergency of international concern. This public health emergency of international concern was needed in order to use untested new drugs on people. And that's what's happening right now, because all these so-called vaccinations, I'm going to spare you the details here, but they're not vaccinations. This is, some people say, and many people agree, that these are experimental gene therapies.
They're making GMO humans.
Yes, yes.
And as far as I know, I'm the only one who's saying that. Maybe it scares people.
No, no, but other people are saying the same.
That it's GMO humans? I haven't.
Yeah, Dr. Wolfgang Wodak, who 10 or 11 years ago stopped the swine flu, which was their first attempt at a real pandemic. He stopped the swine flu almost single-handedly, because he was then in a position of power as a member of the German parliament and also as a member of the European Council. And he agrees with that. And I think there are a number of other doctors, both in your country and here in Germany.
Yeah. Oh, they agree with the general idea. Yes. Yeah. I just meant the phrase.
Yeah. But, oh, no, that's yours, of course.
No, I mean, I think I want to take credit, because I want people to say, look, you're so worried about GMO vegetables. My God, we're making GMO children in the U.S. I'm hoping that the children's issue will really arouse people more. We're going to emphasize that, you know, don't sacrifice your children to almighty gov.
Yes.
You know, don't do it.
And don't sacrifice it to people who are not, who you think they're your government, they're our politicians, but they're not. They're just puppets. Somebody else is pulling their strings.
Yes.
And so this is what happened. This is what we found out by talking to all of these experts, including Dr. Mike Eden, former vice president of Pfizer, a former assistant secretary of housing and urban development, Catherine Austin Fitz, great woman, also a former investment banker. We've spoken with Professor Luc Montagnier, who got a Nobel Prize for his work. And they all agree that this is not about health, but rather this is about the deliberate destruction of our economies and of our livelihoods and of our health.
I think Western democracies. It's the destruction
of Western democracies. There is no Chinese democracy, not really, you know. And you know what? Some of our German politicians, including one of the people who one of the co-leaders of the Green Party, are openly talking about maybe it makes sense to adopt the Chinese system, because democracy is so slow. They're much faster when they want to implement new regulations and new rules. They're openly discussing that.
Yeah.
And I don't see how they can stay out of jail once this whole thing is over.
Well, we have found that people like Klaus Schwab,
yeah,
and maybe indirectly, but No, pretty. No, I mean, really, Bill Gates has kind of said the same things they do. He said they're doing a lot better job controlling things in China than the Americans are. I mean, they've said things. Even Gates has said things like that. So we really have concluded that the Chinese communist model is the model for the globalists. What they don't realize is that China, as a Marxist country and as a country with a tradition of empires, will just become the Chinese Communist Empire. They will eat these. They'll view Bill Gates as a petty bourgeois. I mean, they'll just eat them alive. And I think that the politicians in Germany think that's the kind of system we need. They have no idea what role they'll play in that system. They'll be toys of Xi Jinping. They really will be. And so listen, anybody watching this and who thinks, is a global predator, you're not going to make it. When you have collaborated in the destruction of American democracy, which is happening and which is the bulwark, and take down as well Germany and Australia and Great Britain and Canada, you're going to be dealing with a dragon. It's going to be a Chinese empire. It's practically swallowed Australia already. And these are the kinds of things I want to talk about. I don't think of myself as a psychiatrist doing this work. I'm more of a medical historian, if anything, in terms of the stuff that we're looking at. This about the history of the world and the gathering of a new kind of empire. We've had multiple empires. We've had Genghis Khan and we've had Caesar. We've all kinds of empires. And now we have a new one that's led by the digital world, which is an empire that is communist in orientation, but fundamentally totalitarian in orientation. It's absolutely murderous. And the Marxist folks, they've killed hundreds of millions of people. I mean, it really is in the hundreds when you start looking at the whole scope and in a very short time. And they don't care whether a few people die from vaccines. They love it. It doesn't bother them at all. I don't know. Does this sound a little bit too much?
I think I agree with you. Because I would, if somebody, I think I said this before, if somebody had told me all of this a year and a half ago, I would have told
them. Well, me too. Yeah. Me too. But I would think they'd already.
I'm not completely surprised. I'm only because I've seen what's going on in the courts of law here in Germany and how corrupt the system, even the judicial system, is.
Oh, yes.
But I had no idea how far-reaching and pervasive this is, this, let's just call it generally, a system of corruption, because that's what we're dealing with. It is not about money. The people who are behind this don't need money. They have more than enough, but they're using it. They're using it to pay off politicians, media people, doctors. They're actually bribing people. And I would not have believed that maybe 70 or 80% of those people who they have of the people in general can be bought by promising them that they will, including Angela Merkel, of course, that they will have a seat at the table when this is all over, but they won't. They'll all be thrown under the bus by these people.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. You know, when I started this, I was so ignorant that I didn't even know there were at least a dozen good books on the Chinese takeover of the United States. And there are really in-depth books by former defense people, former security people in the U.S. One that goes back to 2012 where he talks with embarrassment about how he was in the CIA and these other places, and they were just constantly apologizing for the Chinese while they were getting infiltrated. And how all of the organizations in the U.S., the major institutions, have been infiltrated by the Chinese communists. I didn't know these books even existed.
Me neither.
Then they're there. I got 12 of them, I think, listed in my book. I can send you some of that stuff. I mean, I'm glad I'm bringing this to you. It was shocking to me. I don't know if it's happened to the same extent in Germany. I would have no way of knowing, or Great Britain, or what's happening there. Mm. Well, Yeah, they're taking over your industries as best they can. And see, that's why Trump, I think, is the one who precipitated the acting before they wanted to, because Trump was directly confronting, I don't think he knew what it was he was confronting when he confronted China, but he was directly confronting a mass of deep communist infiltration, which includes our deep state. We're looking at that. We have here a wonderful young woman, she's got an MD and a PhD. I'm 85, she looks young to me, whom you may not know, Li Mingyan, Li-Mengyan. She's been twice on my show now. She's been on a lot of the conservative right-wing media. She's a Chinese virologist working in Hong Kong who fled to tell America that the release was intentional. It was done by the military. It's a part of what the Chinese call unrestricted warfare. She knows this from all her contacts, she said. She's in hiding in America. And she's been on only none of the regular media, but she's been on Fox News a couple of times, and we've been interviewing her, and we know her well now. And she's been traveling around the U.S. giving talks and being amazingly well received. And she describes her certainty that this was always planned, but probably precipitously. Really, she thinks that it wasn't an accident. She has an interesting take. She says, from everything she can gather, it was not an accidental release, but it was a purposeful release on Chinese people in the Wuhan area. They had no idea how quickly it would spread, she said. But once it spread, they didn't contain it the way they have always contained, because they've had four previous leaks in communist China, at least, that we document in the book. They're very clearly documented. Most of them 2003-04 of coronaviruses, SARS coronaviruses, mm-hmm. four leaks. And she says that once it started to get released and they saw how contagious it was, then we know, there's no doubt about this, they then just spread it as fast as they could around the world, denied it existed, kept airplanes coming to the U.S. We got like estimates between 400,000 and 700,000 passengers from China after China had already shut down their own travel. Mm-hmm. She talks about the development of the virus with the U.S. in labs in China, in labs, and we have just so much data on that now. I mean, Fauci's funded a dozen at least studies involving Chinese people, involving U.S. people, sometimes together, sometimes separately, all doing some or another variation on gain of function. And the earliest gain of function we found Fauci doing is 1997. We have in the book and the chronology. There's probably earlier ones. They were taking viruses from one species of animal and getting it to attack another species mm-hmm. of mammal up the chain, heading toward humans, back mm-hmm. in 1997. So we're filling in a lot of stuff that I think that your lawyers need to hear more about. In America now, this is becoming well known, at least among those of us who are doing this work.
Among people like Francis Boyle, for example, right?
Yeah, people are better.
Yeah. He believes that the so-called vaccines are the actual bioweapons, and I tend to agree with that.
Well, there's really actually no question, because you see, the Wuhan Institute, people don't know these simple things, is run by the Chinese communist top military biological warfare person. It's a woman scientist. She was appointed in January or February, but even of 2020. But even before that, in other words, she was put there the minute the thing broke. But before that, all institutions like the Wuhan Institute are part of the military in China. There's no difference in China. There's a policy in China of military-civil fusion. There's no distinction between a Chinese corporation and the Chinese Communist Party. And people don't get that that's what's going on, but that is what's going on. They recently took down the head of the largest corporation in China because he was being a little recalcitrant. They disappeared him. Moore is his name.
Is that Jack Ma?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so all that research that goes back years in the scientific papers involving the top Wuhan people in China, separate from U.S. and sometimes with people from U.S., is part of a Chinese communist military. The distinction doesn't exist there. It exists more in the U.S., but even Fauci's very closely involved with our military. We don't have a lot of hard data, but we do have their collaborations, their joint funding, DARPA, which is our cloak and dagger military, has funded some of the things that Fauci's promoting in the way of gain of function. So we're digging into all this stuff here. And I don't know why no one other than me and Ginger are really, really doing it. Maybe because me and Ginger have been researching the pharmaceutical industry. You know, I go back to testifying against the pharmaceutical industry in the 1990s. So being a medical expert against the pharmaceutical industry. So I think we brought that in, and Ginger's been interested in cloak and dagger, and she thinks outside the box a bit more than I do and scares me, and then she turns out to be right. Ginger's latest conspiracy theory is newspaper headlines now. Yeah, there is a very deep and organized thing going on, which now what would lie behind what I'm describing, I don't know. You know, maybe there's something even behind this, but certainly the henchmen of it, it really is Gates and Klaus Schwab working with the UN, working with who, working with the Chinese communists. That's the depth we go to.
And these are the people who we as lawyers will have to go after, because they're out there in the open. They're the ones committing these crimes more or less openly. It's Drosten who invented the lie that they're asymptomatic infections, which is what you needed in order to make everyone become afraid of everyone.
Exactly.
And he's also the one who invented the lie about how a PCR test can tell you anything about infections.
Who is that? I don't know that name.
Oh, that's the German equivalent of Fauci.
Fauci, and what is how spell his name?
His name is he calls himself Professor Dr. Drosten, Drosten, and through the
Drosten. 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 Okay, what's his first name in addition to Professor
Christian.
Okay.
And it turns out that he, just like many other of their puppets, is more or less an empty shell with a, we believe now, completely fake academic background.
Really?
Yeah. His, here in Germany, if you want to be a professor of anything, you normally have to first get a doctorate, which requires, 200, 300 pages of writing a dissertation. Then you teach at your university for a while working on instead of a dissertation, this is called a habilitation thesis, which is like twice as long as a dissertation. And in his case, there are two people. One is a historian, the other a doctor of chemistry who knows something about PCR tests. They were looking into his background because he became Germany's number one virologist through this crisis. He had actually appeared in the same role 11 years ago during the swine flu.
Fauci was in the same role during AIDS.
Yes.
And did the same disgusting things he's done now.
Exactly. So it turns out that these two guys found out that he did not write a habilitation thesis. Rather, his position as a professor at Charité University, which is in Berlin, was given to him by one of the Germany's richest families, the Quandt family. They're known worldwide because they own BMW, for example. Now, these two guys took a closer look and decided, well, if he hasn't written a habilitation thesis, but got his professorship for free, donated by the Quad family, maybe there's something wrong with his dissertation. And they took a closer look at that one. Supposedly, he had written it in 2003 and gotten his doctorate in 2003. Turns out there was no dissertation. They couldn't find it. I'm going to spare you the details, but they, independent of each other, tried to find out what was going on. And then they finally met each other and they found out that they'd both been lied to, given all these strange explanations for why his dissertation was nowhere to be found, why it wasn't listed in our national library, which, like, when I wrote my dissertation, they were right after me because they wanted to have 3 or 10 copies, I think, so that they would be able to list it in the National Library. His wasn't listed there. It was listed for the very first time in June of 2020 when these people began looking into his real life. So he's a complete fake, we believe. He's the one who started this whole thing because it was his PCR test, which was recommended through the WHO, which created all these cases, which were not cases, but most of them were false positives. Almost,
right. At least, well, even if they were an important medical distinction that they have overridden is that even if they were positive for the virus, they're not cases because they're not sick people.
Yes, yes.
In the tradition of international medicine, a case is a sick person, not somebody who you test and find has been exposed, yeah. Or everybody who was positive for HIV or herpes or all the other things we have. God knows how many viruses I have in my body that potentially could hit you. It's ridiculous, but I don't have all those diseases. And I'm not a case.
It doesn't mean a thing. You can test positive. And this guy knows it because he didn't really cover his tracks well enough. He gave an interview some 6 years ago connection with MERS, which is another coronavirus. And in that interview, he said, even if a nurse, he was referring to a nurse, if she tests positive because the test finds something passed by her nose. That's, I think, how he phrased it. It doesn't mean a thing because people who are perfectly healthy may very well test positive.
They carry viruses. We all carry a multitude of viruses all the time. And infection is an entirely different idea where it's actually taken over your cells and you're getting sick. And well, there's just tons of interesting information here. And we have maybe 3 or 4 minutes left. I would like to have you just talk about whatever you think you want to communicate to America and the rest of the world on the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour to my wonderful audience.
Let's find something that shows you that there's light at the end of the tunnel. Now, we believe, after having interviewed so many experts, again, it's not going to be the courts of law that'll turn the tide, but it will be the people. That's why it's so important to bring out all this information so that many more people are going to ask questions. And once you start to ask questions, you're going to get answers, real answers, not from the mainstream media, but from sources like you and our Corona Committee and others. And you'll ask more questions, and then you will begin to understand. If you get the historical context of what we're seeing right now, you will begin to understand what is going on. This is not something that that there are politicians who are making some strange mistakes. No, this is being done on purpose. Once you have reached that stage, the whole riddle is solved. And that's when the whole house of cards is going to collapse because we are many more than they are. And us who are on the side of those who are trying to find out what's going on, I'm not trying to be arrogant, but we're the ones who are a little bit smarter than they are because we don't walk in these set pathways, but we're the ones who are trying to see what's going on. We're trying to go outside the box. And that's what makes the difference eventually. We're not going to be digitalized. We're still humans, and we're going to stay human.
Well, this is exactly what Ginger and I believe, that folks need to know that this whole thing was planned. And we did not expect that. We were shocked. We had no idea the connections between the global predators, that we could document them working through the UN back around as early as 2012 and 2010, making plans and so on. And I think that that's the critical thing. And that's what we're devoting our book to and our work to. It's the plan. Yeah. Folks, it was planned. And if it came out prematurely, as we've discussed today, I think it came out prematurely because Trump stood up as the first president of the United States who wasn't a globalist since maybe Lincoln or somebody. I don't know where it begins, honestly. Haven't tried to figure that one out, but certainly goes back well before the Bushes and Clintons. These are globalists, all the presidents, until Trump came along and he said, I'm not going to cooperate with China and be eaten alive by them anymore. We're not going to lose our industry anymore. And he raised our employment rate to the highest in our history for every minority group. So he had this huge impact, and it was all anti-globalist. He closed the border, he put the fence, it's all anti-globalist. And he didn't probably know it, but he was fighting a giant plan, which immediately kicked in and brought all these global predators. In the book, I use the metaphor of just sweeping out of the cave like so many horrible monsters screaming on the attack because they saw that America was reversing its left-wing communist globalist trend. And the America of the founders was coming back. And I call it the refounding of America and the refounding of democracy throughout the world. It's what we got to do.
He definitely did the right thing when he tried to disconnect from these global corporations, global NGOs, yes, including the WHO, including NATO even.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad you agree. And then he let them recapture him under the guise of saving America from the virus. Very sad. He's not yet pulled back from that position. And I think he's going to be surprised. He's going to have I actually love the guy. I just think he's done so much to get us started again. But he's going to have trouble even getting the presidential nomination of the Republican Party if he's not careful, because the big issue is the virus. That's the weapon. It was China's biological weapon, the U.S. biological weapon. We made it together. But their military is inextricable from their biological labs. And I also think in the U.S., we don't know it, but it's probably just as true in the U.S. Okay, thank you. Oh, my God, Rainer Fulnitsch, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure and an honor,
yes, Peter. Thank you. The same here, a pleasure and an honor. Godspeed to you, sir.
Same to you. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.